I got to tell you, Sean, I'm a little tired this morning, a little drained. You might have to carry us today as we do the NHL At The Rink podcast, because last night was a late one of hockey. I was back and forth. We're talking here Thursday morning. It was Wednesday night. I'm back and forth between the Vegas game, Jack Eichel's debut, Colorado, and of course, the women's gold medal game. So here you go. Carry the show, please.
Well, is this something new? Like, I'm not even going to break a sweat here doing this. I'll tell you my secret, though, Dan. I woke up this morning. Brand new Amon or Moth music, like 8 cups of coffee. I'm ready to go. So the game last night was phenomenal, but the opening act might have been even better. So before we get to Jack Eichel and Colorado and the cream of the West, let's talk for a second about that Carolina-Florida game. It was banana lands. It was absolutely crazy. As fast as the Colorado game was, that's how physical and fast the Carolina-Florida game was. And there was some real bad blood there, which is awesome. Like, as a hockey fan, you like bad blood. You don't want to see anything awful happen, but a little malice, a little angst is always good.
I also thought it was very interesting and just kind of like the perfect preview and, you know, guess not if you're a Buffalo fan, that Sam Reinhart scores the tying goal, extends the game before Jack Eichel's debut with Vegas. So Sam Reinhart scores the tying goal, sends the game into overtime for Florida. And then right away, you go right to the Jack Eichel debut. Probably a tough night in Buffalo to see those two things happening. But hey, that's the way it goes. But you're right. Like, Sean, I thought it was fun. It was exactly what you want to see in playoff hockey, right? So I thought that was a great preview of what we could get in the playoffs last night on TNT with the Panthers and the Hurricanes. And then, you know, obviously with Vegas and Colorado, and we'll talk Vegas and Colorado, no doubt, with Eichel's debut and all that. But I agree with you. You can't ignore what happened in that game. And it was a great finish, obviously. So I'm going to pose the question to you, because I don't have the answer that our producer, Bob Bender, asked to us before we started recording. 7-game series, Panthers, Hurricanes, who wins?
Well, if I knew that, I'd go back to Vegas right now. But
no, but true.
Look, if I'm looking at it and there's some recency bias there, I think Florida wins that series just because they have a little bit more offense. They have the ability to generate offense so quickly. Not that Carolina doesn't. I just think that Florida is better at it. They're a little tiny bit deeper. If Bob's going to play like he played last night, you know, the goaltending kind of evens out. Florida might be a little less deep on the back end, but the high-end guys are equal. But it's going to be 7 games, and it's going to be entertaining as all get out. Let me ask you this. What did the ending of the regulation remind you of?
The ending of the regulation? I don't have an answer for that. What did it remind me of? I have no idea. You have something in mind, though. I know.
It was the women's game in Sochi, the gold medal game.
Oh, yeah?
The missed empty net by, what, a centimeter?
Oh, right.
That's and right. And then Florida comes down and ties it, and then 16 seconds into overtime?
Yeah.
Ekblad, looking like a forward, puts it in. Game over.
Made about 700 moves before he scored, you know. Yeah. But you're right, actually. That's pretty good. That I did not think of it at all that way, but you're right. You're 100% right. So, look, I think it would be a fantastic series. It's one of those where you look at and you're like, hey, if we get it, that's great, right? But I also think like a Carolina-Tampa series would be great in the Eastern Conference Final, a Pittsburgh-Tampa, a Pittsburgh-Florida, any one of those series. With these 8 teams that are going right now in the East that are pretty set, I think any single one of them, you know, any of these series are going to be really good. There's no question about it. But if we're going to talk Florida-Carolina, if that were to go 7 games, I'm going to nudge it in Florida's direction like you did, Sean, simply – well, for a couple of reasons. One, they do have a touch more offense, so there's that. I think that they have more offense from their back end, too. Given Tony DeAngelo, I get it, but like a little bit more offense from their back end. And I think Florida might have a little bit of a killer instinct that I wonder if Carolina has. You know, that's the thing. Carolina hasn't shown us that killer instinct yet. They've been around. They've been hanging around now for a couple of years now as one of the best teams in the league. But do you agree with me that we haven't quite seen their finish yet?
To a degree, I do. The other thing that I would put in Florida's favor is they seem to like nasty.
Yeah.
They got a lot of skill on that team, but they like to grind. They want to play. They'll score 9 goals on you, and they'll still send you back to the locker room when the game's over looking for ice bags. Like, it's not like the Edmonton Oilers scoring 9 and you're like, wow, they skated circles around us and never touched us. And, you know, we might have been embarrassed, but at least we're not hurt. Florida does both.
Yep.
They'll embarrass you offensively and they'll hurt you. Like, you'll know you played in a game with them the next day. Their skill guys are big. Like, you look at their skill guys, right? Like Barkov and all those guys, they're big, big dudes. And then they have, you know, that third, fourth line, Gudas on the blue line. Like, they have guys that
Hornquist.
Hornquist go to the front of the net that know how to play playoff hockey and have been through it. And like I said, they'll just punish you. And in a 7-game series, that's a huge thing.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, a guy like Mason Marchman is that way too. Sam Bennett is that way. You're right. Did you see the comment though, Sam? I guess somebody asked Sam Reinhart after the game, you know, did that game have sort of like a playoff feel to it? And Reinhart's response was, judging by my career, I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Yeah,
he'll get there.
he might make up for some lost time this year.
Yeah, no question about it. So that was fun. And then, you know, on top of that, you had the Jack Eichel debut. Now look, I mean, I thought Eichel was fine. I was laughing at the intermission when Paul Bissonnette was like, he looked awesome. And then Rick Tocchet, who we had on the podcast, you know, at All-Star Weekend not long ago, he's like, slow down. You said awesome. Slow down. He looked okay. He looked, you know, looked like a guy that was just working his way back in. But hey, played 17 and a half minutes, had a couple of penalties, got into it physically, did have like a floater as a shot on goal, you know, took a bunch of faceoffs, didn't win a ton, 8 of 19 he was able to win. But I thought overall, for a guy who hadn't played hockey in almost 11 months, that was pretty good for Jack Eichel.
Yeah, you know, I get accused of in my writing of using the word perfect too often because nothing's perfect. So awesome is kind of like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he was awesome, but I will tell you the one thing that really struck me is every time they panned to him on the bench, he was smiling. He wasn't laboring. That is the fastest regular season game I've seen this year.
Right.
The first period of that game was played at a speed that you don't see in playoffs for the most part, especially later on as teams get beat up. But they were flying. And if you're going to throw somebody into a game like that, you expect them to be labored. You expect them to struggle. And he didn't. And he was smiling on the bench. He was clearly enjoying himself. There was no fear. There was no hesitation. Like, Jack Eichel believes he's back. And if Jack Eichel believes he's back, then everybody else better believe he's back. And I'm saying that, I'm not saying there's not going to be road bumps and there's not going to be speed bumps and there's not going to be bad games, but he's ready to go.
I thought so. Look at the way he played, right? I mean, he was right in the mix, the almost right from the opening faceoff, right in the mix, you know, with, you know, he greets Nathan MacKinnon at the opening faceoff dot and then he is right in it and you get a little physical, you get bumped a little bit. And look, I thought it was it was what I expected, honestly, for Jack Eichel. This guy is an all-world player, and I think we forget about that. We haven't seen him a lot. He hasn't had any success as a team, as a team player this year, you know, this in his career. But this guy's an all-world talent, and at times I think it showed. You know, I'm watching him on the power play a little bit, and it looks like he's just in control. Like, he's just in control, and I think it's going to be a huge benefit to Vegas, which is an obvious statement. But I mean, Mark Stone's on LTIR. Robin Lehner's got an upper body injury. We don't know. So as good as this is for Vegas to get Jack Eichel back, we're talking about a second place Vegas Golden Knights team right now. Maybe not to necessarily all their fault because the Calgary Flames can't lose right now, but a team that doesn't have its heart and soul forward and doesn't have its number one goaltender. And there's, as great as it is that Jack Eichel's back, it's still a lot of question marks for me with the Vegas Golden Knights.
No, and that's been their season from the get-go, right? Like, injuries left, right, and center, you know, controversy. They haven't been a placid team since the puck dropped on the season. I think it's part of the culture that they've developed and that they're so demanding and it's Stanley Cup or bust that, you know, everything is blown up. But they got some issues right now, even with Jack coming back, right? Like, they don't know when Mark Stone's going to come back. And, you know, for the people who say that Mark Stone, how convenient it is that Mark Stone went on long-term IR as soon as Jack Eichel comes back, and that allowed Jack Eichel to come back. Like, clearly you've never been around a professional athlete. Like, all I have to do is say to you, hey, Dan, we don't want you to write for 2 months because we have other people to do it and you should just go hang out. Like, you would freak out.
Yep.
After two weeks, you'd be like, oh, cool, I'm going to vacation. Right. But then you'd come back and you'd be like, somebody's going to take my job. Like, I can't do it. I can't accept this. I can play hockey. I'm going to play hockey. You're paying me to play hockey. Like, there is no elite athlete who just says, okay, you're right. You know, let me take the rest of the year off and I'll come back for playoffs. Nobody does that. You lose your job. I don't care how good you are. You become excess to needs. All of a sudden, the Vegas Golden Knights figure out they can play without Mark Stone and they move him somewhere else. Like, that doesn't happen. So clearly he's hurt. The bigger question is Robin Lehner. Now, Pete DeBoer came out yesterday after there was a wild 24 hours where it was suggested that Marc-Andre Fleury could be traded back to the Vegas Golden Knights, which Brad McCrimmon came out of nowhere off the top rope and said, I never comment on these silly things, but let me just tell you this. Marc-Andre Fleury's not coming back to the Golden Knights. Now, whether you believe him or not is a different story, but they need something because Brossoit looked good last night. Laurent Brossoit, their backup goaltender. But, you know, and Pete DeBoer, again, whistling by the graveyard, said, well, maybe it's a good thing. Laurent will get to play some games and Mark on and Robin Lehner will get to rest and, you know, will be better for the experience. Baloney. He's their number one. He's the key to what they do. He's got some sort of injury that doesn't allow him to play right now. There's some angst in that front office right now.
There has to be. And there's no question because they got Robin Lehner. You know, remember last year they had Robin Lehner and Marc-Andre Fleury. Now, if they don't have either, I mean, and no, Marc-Andre Fleury wouldn't go back, I don't think, to Vegas, and nor would that be entertained. But regardless, look, there has to be angst in that front office because, you know, you're still wondering about the severity, and we're not obviously privy to that information, but you're wondering about the severity of this injury. How long is he going to be out? They're in a good spot. They're going to be a playoff team. We know that. But you want to be clicking, you want to have your guy, you want to have him rolling and all that. And so there's definitely there. And I want to go back to what you were saying about Mark Stone too, because I always laughed when the Kucherov thing was going on with Tampa, right? I mean, oh, you know, Nikita, how convenient, they have cap issues. And now Nikita Kucherov can't play. Number one, he had major hip surgery. Okay. So they wouldn't put a guy through major hip surgery to save on the cap. Okay. That's crazy. Number two, you'd want to make moves with other guys so you can play arguably your best player for the entire season, if that's the case, right? So these guys don't, I agree with you, Sean, they don't leave the lineup at a convenience. They leave the lineup because they are injured. So let's please put that one to bed. Regarding Vegas, though, I think we need to also talk in the Pacific Division about Calgary, right? So here we go. Vegas took over first place in the division. I can't remember exactly when, month and a half ago. And I think we were wondering, I was wondering, is that it? Are they going to roll now with first place the rest of the way? Who can really challenge them? Well, the Calgary Flames have won 8 games in a row. They are dominating these games. They're not just winning these games. They're dominating games right now. In this 8-game winning streak, they're outscoring teams 37-13. All right. That's a little over 4.5 goals, like 4 per game. It's a little over 1.5 against. They're averaging about 10 more shots on goal per game. Their penalty kill is 95.2%. Jacob Markstrom has been terrific. The Flames now have 4 20-goal scorers in Matthew Tkachuk, Elias Lindholm, Johnny Gaudreau, and Andrew Mangiapane. They now have Tyler Toffoli too. I mean, Sean, I didn't know if the Flames were going to be legit this season. And maybe you still say to yourself, I got to see more, but we might be seeing enough now to say that they're legit. I'm really close to thinking that this team is going to be a legit threat when it gets to the playoffs.
What do you want me to do? Talk about their 6th defenseman? You took everything else, Dan.
Yes. Talk about their 6th defenseman, because honestly, that might be an area where they have to upgrade.
You took all of the talking points, but let me say this. Calgary. Early in the year, we're like, oh, look, Calgary, what a cute team. Now, certainly not cute because they do not play cute hockey.
It's Daryl Sutter. He doesn't know the word cute.
They play Daryl Sutter hockey. And I believe if you go back and you listen to the archives of this show, my question would be, could they score? Right? They were going to suffocate teams. Could they score? Could they play, grind it out, wear you down hockey for 82 games? And where would it get them? Well, they can score, as you just detailed in great nuance. They can score almost at will. I look at that Lindholm play last night.
Oh, that was awesome.
he just bounces the puck off of the wall to himself. Like, I might have tried that once in street hockey, and A, somebody probably knocked me down, and B, I probably tripped over the ball when it came back off the wall. But he did it in an NHL game and scored.
It was
unbelievable. So that clearly they have some offensive talent. Clearly they're having some fun. I think Tyler Toffoli is a huge upgrade, not just because of what he can do. And look, he wasn't playing well in Montreal, and not many people were, but you go back and you think about, you know, what he's done. And I think the most important thing is he has a history with Daryl Sutter. Like, it's hard to play hockey for Daryl Sutter. I think anybody will tell you that. It's hard to play hockey for John Tortorella. It's hard to play hockey for some of these guys. And you need to know when you're trading for somebody that they have the mental ability to handle a hard coach. And Tyler Toffoli does. I mean, he's played and excelled with Daryl. He knows what he's walking into. He knows the first time he's at the wrong end of a Daryl outburst that it's not personal, that he'll survive, and that he'll be better for it. So I think that's a huge part of this whole thing. And it's great for the team. Brad Treliving basically pushed all his chips in and said, you know what? I believe in you guys. I'm going to go get you the help you think you need. And I don't care that there's a ton of people sitting out there saying, I gave up too much. I set the market too high. Who cares? Mm-hmm. That's the move that wins you the cup. It's Blake Coleman all over again, right? Or Barclay Goodrow for Tampa Bay, right? How many howls of disgust did we hear? You gave up what? For who? You want a cup.
Two.
Who cares? Who cares what those people are, what those assets became? You're immortalized.
Mm-hmm.
You've done what every team in the league wants to do. You've done what 700 players in this league want to do, and you paid a high price for it. So what? And even if it fails, so what? You went all in, man. You got your pocket aces busted. Oh, well, that happens. But you're not going to have a regret.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think of that for a lot of teams, actually, as this trade deadline on March 21st approaches. But in regards to the Flames, what Treliving said was, the players have done their job. Now it's time for me to do mine. And my job is to help them. And that's exactly what he did. And it's time. I mean, he's been there for a while. This core is not going to stay together forever. It's time. You see an opportunity, you got to go for it. You can't say, like, I think in this league, well, in most of professional sports, you can't say we're close, but we're not quite there yet. You know, maybe we can make the playoffs, but we're not quite there yet. You don't know what next year is going to happen. Like, Jacob Markstrom could blow out his ACL next year, and then all of a sudden it's lost forever, right? No, you got to go in when you got a shot. They got a shot. They're good. And I loved what Daryl Sutter said after the game against Anaheim on Wednesday night. They win 6-2. Elias Lindholm, by the way, should have gotten an assist on his own goal because it was an incredible play. They win 6-2, and he was asked a question. You guys have won 8 in a row. You're rolling here. How do you keep these guys humble? And Daryl Sutter, in a very Daryl Sutter way, said, I'm very good at that, right? And he is. He's the right coach, the right personality for a group that's rolling right now in keeping them humble and realizing they haven't done anything yet. They haven't won anything yet. And I think that's really key for Calgary. And look, you look at the Pacific Division, right? They're first. Vegas is in second. And here come the Edmonton Oilers, too. Look, the Oilers, three, you know, they're playing much better hockey, too. They've won 3 in a row since the coaching change. They're 8-2-1 in their last 11 games. We have way more questions about Edmonton than we do about Vegas and Calgary, but they're back and playing much better hockey right now. And they're a team that, you know, we know the talent they have can get on a roll, too.
I just had the mic dump for a minute because I was knocking on my desk so hard when you're talking about the Calgary goaltender blowing out his knee? Do those things, Dan?
All right, bang on wood, knock on wood, everything. Yeah, no, we don't want that to happen. I'm just saying.
I almost knocked my desk into two pieces, and I was on mute. But goaltending, here we are again, Edmonton. Yep. Yeah, Edmonton. Oh, look, they've won three games since Jay Woodcroft's come in, and look, I think it was a move that needed to be made, but it doesn't solve their problem.
No,
it doesn't solve two of their problems. Maybe he could solve one, and you know, he's tried to. He's played 11 forwards and 7D since he's arrived, and part of that is Jay believes that, you know, maybe he can get more ice time for his elite forwards in doing that. Now, I'm not an NHL coach. I didn't even stay in a Holiday Inn last night, so I can't pretend to be one, but there might be some thought out there that maybe those guys play a little too much.
Yeah.
So trying to get them more ice time in the middle of February is not the answer. But that's an argument for another day. The argument for today is they're going nowhere. Nowhere fast, on a very slow train, if they don't figure out their goaltender.
I agree. And by the way, with Woodcroft, I understand the mentality of trying to get these guys more ice time now. There's no tomorrow. Like, you got to do it now, right? You worry about that later. If you can position yourself in a better spot come a month from now, maybe then you go back to 12-6 and but you got to position yourself in a better spot. But it comes down to goaltending. There's no question about it. It's been better in the last three games. It has been.
They've won. It's a three game
sample. It's
sample
small.
Size. Small. We have 40 something games to go on. That's who the Edmonton Oilers are. That's who an unhealthy Smith is. That's who an inconsistent Koskinen is. That's who a young Skinner is. That's what we have for Edmonton. You can't look at three games and say, oh, they've been better, therefore this is okay. Like, you are who you are 45 games into the season.
Jeez, I'm just trying to be optimistic here, man. You know, just trying to be optimistic for the Edmonton Oilers.
I hear you, but you can't.
I've been so pessimistic on them.
I'm not even pessimistic, but that's the problem. Is every three game slate, people jump on and off the bandwagon.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, look, our goaltending's back. Oh, look, it's the same for every team. Look, the New Jersey Devils had a nice little run there for a minute, and then they can't get goaltending, and they lose to Tampa Bay, and they lose to Pittsburgh, and you're like, what the heck? I guess they aren't any good. And the truth is somewhere in the middle, and I'm not comparing the New Jersey Devils to the Edmonton Oilers. The Edmonton mm-hmm. Oilers are a far more accomplished team than the New Jersey Devils. But my point being that if you live and die in three-game increments, you're never going to see the forest through the trees. You're only seeing the trees. And you're never going to find your way out because you can't get that big picture and honestly say, yeah, my goaltender's been really good for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it stinks. And well, I got to do something about it.
Let's see where they are, because they got Anaheim, Winnipeg, Minnesota, Tampa, Florida, Carolina. These all teams coming up. And then they got a stretch of Calgary, Washington, Tampa. So we're going to find out a lot about the Edmonton Oilers. But Sean, let's get to our guest, who we never teased, by the way, and that's our mistake here. But we were able to catch up with Jeremy Swayman, the Boston Bruins goaltender. And by the way, quick thought from you on Jeremy Swayman. Confident, right, Sean?
Oh, my God. So young, so confident. Not even in a bad way. Like, sometimes you meet guys and you're like, dude, that guy's cocky. Like, no. Oh, my God. He's not. He's just... he's very assured in who he is and what he can deliver. Very polite, very personable, a truly enjoyable interview. And for 2 weeks in a row now, we're getting spoiled, Dan. For 2 weeks in a row, we've actually sat across from the person that we're doing our interview with. And I think they make them better interviews. And you know, we were pretty socially distanced for this one. There may be some clips of it up on the Boston Bruins website. They were filming it. I hope they stayed away from me. I have a voice for radio, with a face for radio, which is why I do this podcast. And it's not on YouTube. But he was great. And I think the fact that we're all in the same room added to it. And I hope the listeners, when they listen, agree.
Well, here you go. Here's that interview with Jeremy Swayman.
Jeremy, thanks so much for joining us. It's nice to actually sit down with a guest. We usually get him on Zoom or on the phone, so it's nice to sit down with one. Wanted to ask you what it's been like for you this season. You're up, you're playing, you're starting, and then all of a sudden you're in Providence, and it's to no fault of your own that you're there, And now you're back playing and starting again. So kind of talk to us a little bit about the roller coaster it's been.
It's been great. You know, I think a lot of positives has come out of it. And again, I'm super fortunate for the opportunities that I've been given. And, you know, no matter where I'm playing, whether it's Boston, Providence, all I want to do is help the team win. So I think I've, you know, done a good job of that. And I've been learning a ton on the way. And I'm just really happy to be back up here. And this level is the best in the world. And they can make plays that, you know, are world class, and it's my job to read those plays and trust my defensemen, which again I do. I have great D-men, and they make my job a lot easier than it seems at times. So it's great to have that, you know, at this level. But exactly, it's learning every day. No shot is the same, and just getting to get this experience is something that I'm really, really valuing.
Is it what you expected it would be at the NHL level, like the speed, the pace, and your play too at the same time?
I've watched it for a long time, you know, ever since I was a kid, and even getting to see the game change a little bit has been fun to be a part of. So being on ice level with the guys now, it's so special to get to, you know, experience that and be on the same level. But as much as their, you know, game rises, I want to do the same and make sure I'm doing what I need to do on practice days and game days to prepare and perform at this high level.
Do you have a welcome to the NHL moment yet that you're going to tell your kids and your grandkids about, like that one moment where you're like, oh my God?
It's been special. I think the one that I can think of right now is my first ever morning skate with the Bruins. And I was a little bit, you know, wide-eyed, and I was, you know, obviously super excited to be there. But, you know, morning skate in college, it's pretty, you know, low key, kind of a little slower. You're getting a little more rest time, getting a water. So I went up over to the bench to grab a water. And next thing I know, Marshy and Berge are coming down on a 2-on-1, and I'm not in the net. Sway, where are you? So that was kind of my word. Welcome here. You know, we don't wait for anyone. It's go time moment.
You know, and these guys, you know, I'm watching, you know, you play, and I'm watching the reactions with your goalie partner, Linus Ullmark, with the team. There seems to be like they've brought you in. They've embraced you. For the longest time, the Bruins have had Tuukka Rask. He's been their goaltender. So what has it been like for you integrating yourself into this team?
It just goes to show the leadership that we have. And that's, you know, not for me. It's for every young guy that comes in. It's for every guy that's been traded that comes in. And it's a team environment. You know, our leaders, Berge and Marsh, are those guys that are going to welcome you but also expect highly of you. And it's the best feeling in the world when you do that, and knowing that you're competing as hard as you can for the crest and for this team. That's what makes the Boston Bruins the Boston Bruins, and being a part of it is something that you know, I'm going to value while I can, and definitely make sure it happens for a long time.
Boston's about as far from home for you as you can possibly get. Stay in North America, being growing up in Alaska, and it's a pretty unique place. What about that city have you enjoyed so far?
Everything. There's not one thing I don't like about it. It's so well spread out. I've been so welcomed by the community, and I absolutely love everything about it. I was fortunate to go to UMaine, which is a little north of Boston, and you know, I got to be in the city for a couple of games against BU, BC, and I fell in love with it. It was so great, and obviously the love they have for the Bruins is unmatched. And you know, be a part of this original six franchise, it means so much to wear that crest every day. And whatever I could do to, you know, represent them properly is, you know, what I'm going to do.
Do you like the pressure? Because being the goaltender for the Boston Bruins in such a hockey town comes with pressure. Just ask Tuukka, right?
Yeah. Well, pressure makes diamonds, you know. And so that's what I love about it. I think there's a lot of incredible opportunity that I've been given here. And this team, you know, it's an incredible place to play. Everyone in that locker room understands that. And I think that we have a great stage and a great team, a great organization, great fan base to make really good things happen.
Is there a piece of advice that Tuukka gave you before he left again?
Well, I think, you know, we're not done communicating, him and I. It's been great. And, you know, we get to see each other, you know, as much as we want. We live close to each other, so it's great. I plan on having a long relationship with him, and asking him a lot of questions because he's been through it, and you know, he's super open to that. He's been a great mentor for me, but I think the best thing he gave me was just play your game and be happy because you're playing, you know, for the Boston Bruins, best league in the world, and you can't really complain about much, right? So even on those bad days, enjoy it and make sure, you know, you're competing, doing whatever you can to give your team the best chance to win. And that's exactly what I've been trying to do, and it's been so fun.
In researching before sitting down with you, I read a story, and it was always about, like people were doubting you. You know, can he do it? Can he do it? And yet, wherever you went, you would tell the coach, I'll win games for you. Did you say the same thing to Bruce Cassidy and to Don Sweeney?
I did. Yeah, it was. It's a little different, you know, saying it to those big dogs, but it's also awesome to have that confidence in myself and ensure that, you know, they have that confidence in me as well. So obviously, I want my play to do the talking. And, you know, it's been funny to see these different coaches kind of come out and say, hey, he told me the same thing. You know, it's kind of funny. But, you know, I think that's an important thing for me personally to get that out there and to make everyone know in this organization that all I want to do is help this team win games.
Where does that confidence come from? Not everybody has it. Like, some people are quiet about it. Some people are, they boast and they don't really back it up. But for you, where does that confidence to be able to say wherever you are, hey, I'm your guy?
A lot of it has to do with my family, my dad especially. He's been one to, you know, always achieve above and beyond expectation. And I think having a rock like that, you know, in my life so close that I get to communicate with every day is a super big, you know, reason why I have that confidence and always wanting more for myself and leaving no doubt. So, you know, definitely I wouldn't be here without him and all of his teachings.
So let's use the confidence. I'll ask you, see how confident you really are. Are you a number one goalie in the National Hockey League?
I'm going to do whatever I can to be, absolutely. But again, at the end of the day, I want whatever is best for the team. And if I could be that guy, I'm going to make sure I am.
What do you say to people who, when they talk about it, you and Linus now, Tuukka's gone, there's no playoff experience there, and playoffs are such a different animal according to everybody that's never played the position. How do you look at what lies ahead and the fact that the two of you will go into the playoffs with neither one of you having extensive playoff experience?
I think the best thing is just taking it day by day and making sure that we're doing whatever we can to get better. And that's the great thing about Linus and I. We keep things simple. He's been a super awesome veteran, friend, mentor for me as well. And, you know, he's had great experience in the league, you know, and no matter what, it doesn't change whether it's a playoff game or a regular season game. We want to have that same intensity, same drive, and same desire to win games.
And the fans all see you guys hugging all the time, you know, after wins and whatnot. So I guess, you know, for the people listening here, explain how that all came about.
It was pretty natural. You know, I think it was after the home opener, and he came in hot after the, you know, kind of line, and he put his hands up, so I put mine up, and we just hugged, and so it kind of never left, and it happens, you know, away from games too. It happens at practices and workouts. It's great. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's like the goalie version of the storm surge, or what? Do you think about different ones to do?
We laughed about that. You say, what else can we come up with now? No, we want to keep it as simple as possible, not make it about us, but it's definitely nice to have that, you know, guy to hug and really appreciate.
Because he understands what you just went through, right? And you understand what he just went through. And you're the only ones there that do, I would imagine.
Exactly.
So yeah, if you don't have that relationship with the other goalie, you know, even if you're competing against each other, you know, do you feel there needs to be that relationship with the other goalie?
There's definitely no negatives that could come from it. You know, it is exactly what you said. It's, you know, we both understand the grind. We both understand, you know, how meaningful a win in this league is. And if we can support each other doing that, we're going to do that to the best potential.
Has it been rare in your experience to have that?
I think in my past experience, I've been fortunate to have, you know, great goalie partners. You know, this one being more of a friendship base and, you know, love for each other, brothership. And it's been great. You know, I think there's a lot of positives that come from, you know, positive reinforcement from the guy that, you know, you're competing with, because you guys make each other better every day, whether it's, you know, on ice or off ice. And that's, you know, only good can come from that, especially for the team. So I think the guys really appreciate that. And obviously Linus and I do as well.
Last one from me, and I wanted to go back to where you're from. You're from Alaska, is there something extra meaningful for you to be in the NHL from Alaska? Because we've seen it, you know, guys coming in, Brandon Dubinsky, Scott Gomez, a handful of guys, but it's not all the time, you know, that you got guys from Alaska coming in. What does it mean to you to represent that?
Everything. And it's a great question because, you know, I think there's only two guys in the league now. It's Nate Thompson and I. And growing up, exactly, it was the same thing. It was like three, four guys, and then, you know, you get Gomez and Nate Thompson, or Nate Thompson too, but Dubinsky making great names for themselves and always being proud to be Alaskan. And I think that's the coolest piece is that not many people have that, you know, from their home country or home states. And, you know, Alaskans, we really love that, you know, chip on our shoulder to just show the world that even we're from Alaska, we're proud to be here and we could definitely make an impact in this game.
Do you play the Alaska trump card during the long trips when guys are complaining and you say, dude, this is how we get to the grocery store here or what?
Exactly. Yeah. The West Coast trip was like, you know, it's kind of being dreaded, but hey, it's an easy, you know, weekend vacation for me. It's good. We're glad to be back on the plane.
The last one for me, when you're in the room and you're looking around, you talked early on about the leaders on this team. You have a guy like Patrice Bergeron. Like, do you find yourself just sitting there watching what he does to try and learn not skills but just how to be an NHLer?
I probably annoy him sometimes with how much I ask him questions. So no, he never gets annoyed. He loves helping the younger guys. He loves helping, you know, the older guys too. Everyone can learn from him, but absolutely, I get the pleasure of, you know, just watching the pinnacle of a pro hockey player every day, and I learned so much from that. And I'm super fortunate to have, you know, him as a great mentor and captain.
Great stuff, Jeremy. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys.
I mean, you can tell from the interview, right, Sean? Like we touched on going into the, you know, before we played it, like the confidence that this guy has is evident. You know, the ability to go to Bruce Cassidy and Don Sweeney and say what he has said to youth coaches throughout his, you know, time coming up, like, I'll win games for you. And that's what he's doing. I mean, that look, 9-7-3. A 2.15 goals against and a 9.23 save percentage in 20 games this season. He's been really good, and he's been even better since he came back from Providence on January 29th. And that was a tough spot for him to be there when he really probably didn't deserve to go down.
Everybody's better when they come back from Providence, Dan.
If they come back from Providence.
You should know that by now. No, he's been great. And he called them the big dogs, right? He walked into the big dog's office and told them, hey, I'm going to win games for you guys. And I think that's why he's been so accepted so quickly there. Nobody cares about your pedigree. Nobody cares about your personality. Nobody cares about any of that. What are you going to do for me on the ice? Like, our window's closing. We need a goaltender. Can you be that guy? I don't care if you're 22. I don't care if you're 42. I don't care. Win me a game and I'll be your best friend. And he's won games, and him and Linus Ullmark have made a good tandem, and they're going to have to make a good tandem going forward because Tuukka Rask is out of the equation now. His comeback didn't quite work as he had hoped. The hip's not good enough to play. And, you know, he made that decision that he couldn't go on. Sad for everybody, I think, involved with the Bruins. He's a legacy Bruin, right? I mean, he's a franchise guy. And, you know, anytime you see those guys go out, and especially not on their own terms, awful. So, you know, they're going to have to be a good tandem going forward, because I don't imagine that the Bruins are going to do anything in that market. They've already upset that apple cart once with Tuukka coming back, and I don't know that they want to upset it again. So it'll be interesting to see what those two do as the games get bigger.
Yeah, and that's going to be the biggest thing with the Bruins. Well, one of the biggest things with the Bruins, and, you know, Tuukka certainly is. I mean, Bruins fans have questioned him and criticized him for years. He's the all-time leader in wins in Boston Bruins history, and that's a long history. So, yeah, he is someone special that should be revered in Bruins in Boston hockey circles. There's no question about it. But what it also means, based on what we saw from, you know, some of the treatment that Tuukka got from the fans and, you know, the questions and the criticism, that's what Swayman and Ullmark are going to face, you know? And so you have to have a head on your shoulders to be able to handle that. Tuukka did, no question about it. And I think from what the early indications are, Swayman does too. We'll see. Though we'll see, because they're going to go into the playoffs, and they are going to go into the playoffs. I don't see anything changing with the top eight in the East. They're going to go into the playoffs with no experience at the most important position. The good thing for the Bruins, and I saw it up close, well, I guess from the press box, so not that close, Tuesday night at Madison Square Garden. They don't have Patrice Bergeron. They don't have Brad Marchand in the lineup. Their structure, their discipline, the way they defend, the way they protect, it's typical Bruins hockey. That has not changed. They need more offense. There's no question about it. But that's going to really help Swayman or Ullmark, whoever gets that nod, you know, in the playoffs, if not both of them, and especially down the stretch. They still play a very strong, structured brand of Bruins hockey. I'd like to see Don Sweeney push the chips in a little bit for offense if you think you have a shot. But that's going to really be a big time help for the goaltenders who have no experience.
Look, they're a second tier team.
They are
in the playoffs right now. I put them with Washington and some of those other teams in that. Of course, they belong in the playoffs, but they're not the elite teams we saw play last night in Carolina and Florida. They're not Tampa Bay. They would have a very hard time getting out of the East. They would be a little like the Cincinnati Bengals, right? Everything mm-hmm. would have to break their way. Some teams would have to really fall apart, I think, for them to get to the Stanley Cup final this year, unless they make some moves. But before we move on to other things, like, let me just say thank you to Tuukka Rask. Like, I covered that guy since he was a backup goalie in the 2011 Stanley Cup finals when he did the NHL player blog for us.
He did. He's great.
And he was fantastic in that experience. It was him and Thatcher Demko, believe it or not.
No, it wasn't Demko.
No, it wasn't Thatcher.
Not Demko. Come on. Who was it?
Roberto Luongo's.
Corey Schneider.
Yeah. Sorry. It was Luongo's backup. And they both of them were fantastic. Really, really good. I went to Belfast with them when the Bruins went to Belfast and Prague and played that same year that they won the cup. Done numerous outdoor games with them, done projects with them, Team Finland in the World Cup of Hockey. The guy has been nothing but a gentleman throughout, on the ice, off the ice, fantastic to deal with, a winner through and through. Yes, he doesn't have a starting goalie Stanley Cup. A lot of goalies don't have a starting goalie Stanley Cup. I don't know that that's something you hold against them. I wish in the end that he had been held in a little more regard by the fans that supported him. And maybe that comes now. Maybe now that it's all over and people have time to reflect on everything that Tuukka accomplished and the places that he brought them to Stanley Cup finals. How many teams in this league would give digits to get to a Stanley Cup final, to have that experience? So good for him. I hope he enjoys retirement. I hope he plays the drums a lot and really annoys his neighbors. And hope he just has a really good time and coming to grips with the fact that this part of his hockey career is over.
I hope he's visible, because I 100% agree with you. Like, I always enjoyed my interactions with Tuukka Rask, you know, with the brief interactions you have in the locker room with players and whatnot. And but one of the things that always struck me with him that you want out of, we want as people who talk to these guys and as fans, you want brutally honest all the time, you know, like there. And if you asked a bad question to Tuukka Rask, John, he let you know that you asked a bad question to him. Right. And that's fine with me. Like, he held you accountable for what you do. You held him accountable for his job. He held you accountable for your job. So I agree with you on Tuukka, but I like this kid Swayman. I do. And I like the relationship that he has with Linus Ullmark, the hugs, the celebrations. Those are kind of cool. Can they do it though? That's the thing, you know, like, I think that's a big part of this season with Boston though. Cause I agree with you. Like, they're a second tier playoff team with Washington. I mean, I guess the Rangers would be in that tier as well. They're not at the Carolina level or the Florida level or the Tampa level. You know, I think Toronto teeters, in Pittsburgh, probably in the top tier, just based on our history right now. Toronto teeters, and then that three. But you find out about what they're made out of, and if you have goaltending, you know, going forward, whether they win or lose in the playoffs, I think you're going to find out a lot, you know, in the Boston Bruins this season. And that's why I wouldn't mess with it. I wouldn't touch it again. They tried it, like you said, no reason to do it again. This guy Swayman belongs in the National Hockey League. Ullmark obviously does too. let's see where they go from here. Cause I think it's a key part to where they are. And it's, we can't say the development of the Boston Bruins because they're still a veteran team, you know, but they get Bergeron back tonight against the Islanders. Marchand will be back soon. We will see where they go. And that's going to be very interesting, but let's go. Let's hit on, well, we're going to promote the other podcast, Darren Millard's podcast, The Chirp, but it's so worth it. A, it's a great podcast. Number one, JT Brown and Everett Fitzhugh were on that podcast. They're the broadcasters, JT Brown, television analyst for the Seattle Kraken, Everett Fitzhugh, the radio broadcaster. They're making history tonight, Sean. Brown and Fitzhugh will be the first all-black NHL television broadcast team for the Seattle Kraken's game against the Winnipeg Jets. And I think it's just fantastic, and I hope it becomes normalized eventually.
Yeah, no, it is great. And John Forslund is being called up to the national broadcast on TNT, which opened this door. And it's great that it's happening during Black History Month with all these other initiatives going on. But in a way, I kind of feel bad that it's happening during Black History Month, because this isn't a stunt. This isn't publicity for Black History Month. You know, Fitzhugh, obviously in his first year, because the Seattle Kraken are a first year team, but, you know, paid his dues in the minor leagues, just like the players, and has been fantastic, you know, in doing his job this year and being a part of the community. He deserves this opportunity, you know, and it's happened a ton with other teams during COVID times when announcers go down, you know, the minor league guy comes up. It's happened in Vegas. It's happened other places. So it's happening here. And obviously the fact that it's a little bit different, you know, brings attention to it, and that's great. But this is a merit-based thing. This is not any kind of stunt because of Black History Month or anything like that. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think JT Brown's really good at what he does. Like, he brings that player experience and relates to the layperson watching the game in the same way. And obviously they each have a challenge in that they don't have the most knowledgeable fan base. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as this is a new fan base. Everything's new to them. It needs to be explained. There's things that they don't understand that they can't understand. There's things I've been watching hockey for 40 years. The things I don't understand with statistics and analytics that need to be explained to me. So again, no slight to the fans of Seattle who have been fantastic, but it's a different audience than maybe what you're broadcasting to in Boston, right? Brick and those guys are doing a different thing. So I think they've been great, and it'll be awesome to see them play off of each other.
I think it's something to be celebrated, whether it's now, whether it's, you know, was happening in November, December, January, or happened in March or whatever. It's something to be celebrated because A, it's a first, but like I said, you hope eventually, and I think that's what Fitzhugh was saying, that, you know, he said it in that, you know, in that interview, you know, hopefully it will give kids this opportunity. That what means the most to him is it gives a kid who looks like him another reason to dream, another reason to think he can do something that maybe, you know, break a barrier that people keeps, you know, have told him that he couldn't do, right? And that's the key thing about this. That's what I think is so important, and it should be celebrated. But you're right, it's not a stunt. These guys are good. They're a good broadcast team. And I think Seattle's blessed, man. I mean, like, the fans in Seattle are blessed with some great broadcast teams, because Forslund's among the best in the world, you know, at calling a game. And, you know, and then these guys, you know, JT Brown's excellent as an analyst, never fits you. I've listened a little bit here, and he's right on it. Like, he's really good. And, you know, they're talking about a team that, you know, has struggled, no question about it, but, you know, everything's new, everything's different. And one of the things that I also found really interesting was Fitzhugh telling the story of when he went to get a COVID test done, and Morgan Geeky, one of the players for Seattle, mentioned to him, "Hey, your broadcast's coming up. I know you guys are going to kill it. It's going to be great." The players are taking notice. And I think that's really important too here, because it should be celebrated and it should be sold. And if the players can help sell it too, that's even bigger.
Yeah. And it's, if you can see it, you can be it, right? And I think before we go on with more NHL news, before we get done, this is a perfect segue into the women's gold medal game yesterday, right? Like, you talk about representation and seeing something, and we're seeing now the pioneers of the women's game, what they've delivered to us, right? There's a whole generation of women who have grown up expecting to play in the Olympics, expecting to be on that stage, expecting to deliver the drama they deliver Olympics after Olympics. And look, I know it's the same two teams. I don't care. Like, good hockey's good hockey. And if I get that game every 4 years, like last night, 3-2, Canada wins. Congratulations to our friends from the North.
There,
I said it with all the enthusiasm I could muster. Sure. But no, congratulations to the Canadians. You know, another great game. 2-0, they were up. The Americans fought back and, you know, just didn't have enough at the end. But, you know, that generation has grown up with the expectation that they get to do these things. And it hasn't always been that way. And that's what Fitzhugh and Brown and others are doing in their profession. And it's happening in every profession, right? So every segment of you know, what we try and bring together under the umbrella of you know, hockey is for everyone. So, but yeah, no, you know, that gold medal game was fantastic. And you know, I know that all of the tournament wasn't great. There were a lot of blowouts. There was a lot of angst leading up to that final. Let's remember this, too. It's a young sport. It's 30 years old, maybe, right? What, the first one was Nagano, the first mm-hmm. time the women played. So, you know, there's some patience involved here. And when you think of some of the teams on the men's side who weren't very good, who are now good, you know, you need to give it time. You need to let it invest and percolate. And those other teams are going to come. And until they do, there's two elite teams that just deliver drama after drama after drama. So it's all good with me.
Yeah. And if you didn't have a big stage, you wouldn't have the ability to showcase it, right? And so it belongs in the Olympics. I don't care that there's two teams. Eventually, if done right, other countries are going to catch up. That's what's going to happen. And you're right, Sean. It might not happen in the next Olympics or even by the 2030 one. It could happen, you know, 12 years from now. Who knows, right? But other countries are going to catch up if you keep it where it is, and it's going to make it harder. It's just the nature of how it goes if they're invested in it. You have to invest in it. And if they do, other countries catch up, and then you're going to have just a great tournament every 4 years. And might, you know, you might have enough at that point too to say, all right, let's open it all up. We can have an internet, you know, we can have a professional league with great international flavor too. So it's something to be, you need to play the long game here, but in the short term, in the short game, we get terrific, terrific hockey games like we got last night, like we always get when Canada and the United States play. And it's one of the best rivalries going in all of sports. And that won't be said by talking heads elsewhere, because maybe they're not paying as much attention to it as whatnot, but it is one of the best rivalries in all of sports right now, probably because they are the top two and they play each other so often.
Yeah. And it's recency bias, right? Like there's so few benefits of being on the wrong side of 50, Dan, but one of them is I can remember things that happened a long time ago. And you know what? The American men used to be really bad at international hockey. They were not good at all. 1980 was an outlier because it was an outlier, because it was never supposed to happen. They were supposed to get crushed and they didn't. And it changed the course of history. And we want to take away those miracle opportunities for all these other teams. When these other teams finally beat the US, finally beat Canada, like, it's going to be on par with that. And it is going to spur a growth that is going to be unbelievable. But because here in North America, we're used to having good teams, and now the Americans are halfway decent at international hockey, although you probably couldn't tell that from this Olympics when they crashed out to Slovakia in the quarterfinals. But and they haven't had a good run for a long time, the Americans. When you go back and you look at where they finished, it hasn't been pleasant for many years now. Mm-hmm. But we're in a position where we can take away those miracles from other teams. Screw that. Mm-hmm. Let them get their teeth kicked in. They like it. I would like it. Like, I've never heard a women's team player say, wish we didn't have to play the Americans. Wish we could go to the Olympics and not play Canada. It's their gold medal game. And they lose, who cares? They get better. And they want to do it again the next time. Nobody ever walks away from it and says, I don't want to do this anymore. You wouldn't be in that position if you didn't want to play the best.
You need the big stage, and they have it, and they got to keep rolling it and keep rolling out on the big stage. And eventually you're going to get competition in the earlier games. There's no question about it that you're not getting right now. All right, quickly, let's move on. Super 16 this week. We talked about the Calgary Flames before. They jumped up five spots in the Super 16 from 14 to 9. You know the team that dropped from 14 from 9 to 14 is the Nashville Predators. We'll be there next week. We'll be doing this podcast Friday from Nashville for the Stadium Series game. Tampa Bay, Nashville, looking forward to it. Anytime I get to go to Nashville, I mean, come on. You know, anytime I get to go to Nashville, you'll be there a day earlier or 2 days earlier, and you'll be there for Pekka Rinne's retirement number, jersey retirement number. I'm not going to be there for that, but Tampa Bay is excited. Their first outdoor game. And now Nashville gets to host at Nissan Stadium, but they're struggling right now, Sean. They've lost a couple in a row here. And, you know, I think they're a good team. I don't want to overreact from, you know, a slump, basically. But they've allowed at least four goals in each game. You know, they've given up a lot of shorthanded goals, six shorthanded goals in the last three games, I think it is, something along those lines. So I wonder if there's reason to be concerned here with Nashville, or is it going to be just fine for the Predators by the time we get to Nashville for the Stadium Series?
No, I think there's always reason to be concerned. Look, they take too many penalties. That's the first thing. You talk about the shorthanded goals, mm-hmm. but they're just in the penalty box too much. They haven't played great. They haven't played to their structure. They haven't done what they're supposed to do. But to me, this is a far different Nashville team than maybe the last couple of years. And just because they have the firepower that they haven't had before. Duchesne's playing great. Forsberg's on. Tyler Janot gives them a little edge there. Can put a few goals in. You know, Roman Josi to me is playing at a Norris Trophy level, and Soros
power play clicks.
Yeah, and that hasn't happened for years. Right. And to me, Soros is in the top three in the Vezina right now. What he's done has been incredible. So I'm not overly concerned with them. If they haven't won by the time we get to the Stadium Series game, there might be a reason to panic, and they'll be playing a really good team there. So, but again, like, it's Nashville, and let's remember, when they came into the league, what a joke it was to so many people. Oh, you're going to play in Nashville. They don't know anything about hockey. A 25-year investment has led to an elite team that's been to the Stanley Cup final, a team that's hosted every major event except for an outdoor game, and now they're going to do that, and you know they're going to kick ass on it because they crush every big event they do, and it's become a destination for even the crustiest of hockey writers who threw them under the bus when they were going to be the Nashville Predators with a saber tooth. What is this, Disney on Ice? Now everybody wants to go to Nashville. Players, fans, coaches. It's become a destination. It's because there was a belief in it and there was an investment in it.
And you know what I love about this too, because so, you know, the outdoor game, you know, just quickly before we get out of here, the outdoor games, I always loved, they're my favorite events of the year, but you know, a lot of times you're getting the same, you know, a same team that's been in it. Right. And whatnot. And, or a team that's got experience in an outdoor game. Not this time. I mean, Nashville does, you know, they played the Cotton Bowl, but Tampa, two-time defending Stanley Cup champion, team loaded with talent. And these guys, Sean, talking to Steven Stamkos at All-Star, they're genuinely so excited for the opportunity to play outdoors. They were hoping to get one in Tampa. They're still hopeful to get one. I don't know that that's ever going to happen based on the weather, but they get to go do one now in Nashville in a great hockey market and a big stadium on a big stage. They're genuinely excited. And I think it's great. Like, that's one of the reasons I love these outdoor games, is you see the level of excitement on the players' faces. Sometimes it matches the level of excitement on the fans' faces in the crowd.
Yeah, no, and it's going to be great. There's going to be a ton of talent on the ice. The weather looks to be perfect. The opening act of retiring Pekka Rinne's number is going to be unbelievable. You talk about a franchise icon. We talked about Tuukka Rask. Like, this guy's an even bigger franchise icon. He made them who they are. Like, he got them from the team that wanted to be to the team that was. And he was that backbone that allowed all of that to happen. And that night in Bridgestone Arena is going to be wild. The love fest that we saw for Henrik Lundqvist, it may be even greater, just because he's the first real hero of that franchise. Like, that's going to be honored in that way. I'm already getting goosebumps thinking about it.
Well, you'll be there. I think you'll be there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I got my way into Nashville 2 days early because of Pekka. So thank you, Pekka.
Not a bad gig if you can get it. No, I can't wait to get there. And that'll do it for us. We thank Jeremy Swayman for coming in and chatting with us. This was a lot of fun, Sean. And of course, But, you know, what we encourage you to leave us a review. You can get the podcast wherever you get your podcast. You can leave us a review. And, you know, you can rate me however you want. But, I mean, you got to rate Sean nicely, right, Sean? Well, you know, they want you.
They 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 for Sean. Rate us, review us, do all that. Keep listening. We'll talk to you next week from Nashville.